I think it's a wonderful opportunity for the listener in beginning this northern journey that we take in this recording to begin from a certain place, and that's to think about Grieg having gone as a teenager to Leipzig, Germany, and studying the classical traditions and becoming a composer by the books, as it were, and then returning to his homeland to sort of find his own voice, which was that of his native land and his people and the folk culture. And I think that's one thing that you can hear easily in Grieg's quartet is the synthesis of classical training a la Beethoven, going all the way back to Beethoven. I think there are many similarities between this quartet of Grieg's and Beethoven quartets. We've spoken of the incredible dramatic use of silence, of the development of motifs. And so I think that the listener has the opportunity to enjoy Grieg's playing with tools of drama in this way. I think the most wonderful things in the Grieg quartet is his use of the unexpected. One never quite knows what's coming next. And this is very wonderful and very exciting and very dramatic in the same way that Beethoven did, in the same way in the future, as Larry mentioned, the Shostakovich also used elements of silence and surprise. It might be an interesting listening exercise to listen to Beethoven's quartet, Opus 131, and then immediately to listen to the Grieg quartet, because the very same things happen in the beginning and the end of both pieces. The opening theme of 131 returns in different clothes at the end of the piece, and so does the first theme of the Grieg. So he must have been thinking of some kind of grand structure in that way, but to serve his own purposes, which at this point were clearly in expressing his fondness for his native land. And in the Sibelius, I think the unexpected, for me, turns into the inexplicable in many ways. It took me a long time to understand this piece on a gut level, because there are many things that happen in it that are completely, cannot be explained in logical terms, especially on a first or even a second hearing. So I would recommend to the listener for this recording to spend a lot of time with the Sibelius, because what happened to me after playing this piece for many years and knowing it really inside out is that the elements which were at one time inexplicable have now become irreplaceable and logical in a mysterious kind of way, the same way that one looks into the stars at night. It's familiar, but yet it has mystery and cannot be explained. I think that Sibelius did this somehow within himself. This is a late work for him. You know, he stopped composing for basically the last 30 years of his life. This comes in the twilight of his career. It's also interesting to note the similarities between these two composers, that they both went south, in Sibelius's case, all the way to Vienna to study. And then they both had a realization somewhere along the way that they should compose really in their own language and not in the language of the Central European composers. Sibelius's realization of this came while he was actually in Vienna. He studied with the composers Goldmark and Robert Fuchs. And I think it's significant that at that time he was also older than Grieg was at the time, but this realization hit him very hard and was very, very profound change. And I think out of that came this more radical departure, which looks musically into the 20th century rather than backwards to the 19th, as Grieg did.